Words appear. The following movie contains adult subject matter. Viewer discretion is advised. The following movie is based on a true story. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH. Described by Brian Gould, Dan Davis, and Jan Stankus. Read by Chloe Lehman. A title, The Many Trials of One Jane Doe. Now in a dark kitchen, a woman in her 30s picks up a telephone. A date appears, August 24, 1986. The woman's thin nightgown clings to her sweat-covered body. With trembling fingers, she dials.
911, what is your emergency?
I need the police. I've been raped. In my home, in my bed.
The police are on their way, ma'am. I need you to stay on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Are you injured, ma'am? Do you need an ambulance?
He had a knife.
Did he cut you?
Yeah.
Are you injured?
How long ago
did you leave?
About maybe 10 minutes, maybe. He told me not to move, that he would know if...
How'd he go out? Did you hear a car?
Oh, he went out the front door. I heard the door. He went out through the building. I don't hear...
Can you tell me what he looked like?
I hear sirens.
Can you tell me what he looked like, ma'am?
He wore a mask. He made me put a pillowcase over my head, so I couldn't see him.
Now listen carefully. It is very important you do not touch or move anything.
Right. Yeah.
Is your door locked? Is your door locked?
The woman's eyes fix on the buzzing intercom. Clutching the phone, she sinks to the floor. Outside, the police race to her apartment. Soon after, two detectives question her.
You fell asleep with the lights on.
Yes, and when I woke up, he
in
was
your bed,
in bed,
and the doors
me.
Were locked.
Uh-huh.
But the balcony doors
no,
wide
that
open.
That was locked.
You didn't hear anything?
Yes.
You see him come
no,
in?
And I'm
Did you
a
see him come in?
He had his hand over my mouth.
Did you hear his voice?
Yes, because he...
Did you hear his voice?
Awake, he said, do what I say and I won't hurt you. Then he made me turn and had something wrapped around his head. It was, that's my thing. So
okay,
he was...
But listen.
Did he go through...
Right,
from my...
Right. Now you're looking at him, what do you see?
I was... nothing. Because then he makes me take a pillowcase over my head, and then he started stroking me.
Okay, now where's the knife as he's stroking you?
He's
on top of you now,
throat.
Or what?
He's
on top?
He's on...
Where is he now?
He goes on top of me at first. He's on top of me at first, and he's, he's penetrating.
Okay.
And he loses erection, and then he started all again.
How long was he here?
He was...
Do you know if he ejaculated?
I didn't know what to do. I didn't know whether he, if he couldn't keep it up, he'd slit my throat. And if he could, he'd finish and slit it anyway. So I wasn't sure if I think he did ejaculate. Uh-huh. You know what? I really have to use the...
Well, no, you have to remain seated.
We don't want to lose any evidence.
You have to stay seated.
Now, he didn't cut you, hurt you in any way?
He raped me.
Did you recognize anything about him?
No, I said I couldn't...
Well, before the pillowcase.
But the lights were off. He had long hair. I could feel long hair.
What, like a native or wiry, like a black?
I could feel it, like light
Chinese?
Skin, not
like
black.
Hispanic?
You know what? You have to slow down because
now he's talking to you.
No, he has.
What did he say?
He says he makes chicha.
No accent.
Sing. Do you have a boyfriend?
He's asking
you know,
questions.
Like your body.
What did you say?
To him, I said, please don't kill me. You know what? I really have to use the bomb.
Listen, we don't want to lose any evidence.
It's really important we do a rape kit first.
Uh-huh.
You gotta stay seated.
We've got an ambulance downstairs. We'll take you to the hospital.
Okay, but what's involved with this rape kit?
Tests, an internal exam, so forth, that kind of thing.
No, I can't do that unless I pee first.
You understand we need evidence to catch this guy, that's what these tests are for?
And you understand that my urethra is not my vagina, right?
We're not allowed to leave you alone, ma'am, until you've been checked out.
Well... I don't know what we're going to have to do because I'm going to pee my pants, okay?
In the bathroom.
I want to call a girlfriend to meet me at the hospital. Is that allowed?
Sure. Yeah.
The detectives stand beside her as she pees. The woman gazes at the floor. Damp strings of long brown hair frame her anguished expression. The woman reaches for toilet paper and a detective waves his hand.
Oh, no, don't wait.
That's evidence.
Okay, ma'am, just hop up here and slide on, lay back and relax.
No, you know what? I wasn't in an accident. I can walk out.
Ma'am, you have to get on the gurney. That's regulation.
Again, ma'am, it's about the evidence, please.
I'm not going to be carted out in front of my neighbors.
We need you off your feet, please.
No.
Yeah. How about you sit on the gurney?
Your
legs
feet.
Together and sit on the gurney, ma'am.
They wheel her out sitting on the gurney, a sheet draped over her head, now in a hospital.
We're going to search your body now. We're looking for hair, blood, skin cells, fingerprints. It's an extremely unpleasant experience, but we'll try to make it as quick as we can.
Now, did you hit him?
No.
No, you didn't hit him, or you don't remember
it? I didn't. He had me pinned down. He had his...
I'm going to need a little bit of your hair.
Hands on my
wrist.
Either
I can pull it, or you could just pull just about three strands.
The woman pulls a few hairs from her head and gives them to the doctor.
He had a knife and...
I'm just going to do some scraping underneath your fingernails.
All right.
Okay.
Next, the woman lies on her back under a blue sheet. The doctor shows her a speculum.
Okay, good. All right. It's not a very nice looking thing. It's metal and it's going to be a little bit cold. Okay, going in. Okay?
Okay.
Going in?
Yep.
Okay, take a deep breath.
The woman squeezes her eyes shut. Her lips tremble. Later, the doctor gives the woman pills and some water.
These are very powerful antibiotics against disease and the morning after pill.
She swallows the medicine. The doctor studies a microscope.
Hey, we've got sperm. One's still alive.
Kill it.
The woman drops her clothes into the trash. Now she walks through a hospital corridor dressed in fresh clothes with her hair up. She wears a sleeveless black dress and heels with straps. Carrying a straw bag with handles, she adjusts her silver bracelets, then slips on a pair of dark sunglasses. Now the woman walks into her apartment. Words appear. 3 days later, wearing jeans and a Chinese-style blouse, she steps into the kitchen. Another woman follows her.
You can stay in my place longer, you know that, right?
The woman vomits in the kitchen sink. Her friend hands her a towel, then walks into the living room. A name appears, Cherie Williams.
Wow. So the cops are really on it, which is,
She cracks a nervous smile. The woman switches off a light.
The
woman walks past Cherie and locks the balcony door.
It was weird.
No, it's great they're taking it so seriously.
No, there were too many of them, and they were excited. I fully expected them to burst into song.
I wish you'd call your folks.
I don't want anybody else to know. I don't want anybody else looking at me the way you are now. Ever.
At the door, Cherie confronts a man in a suit.
No, I just think it's a little insensitive. I'm wondering if we could do it maybe at another time. She's really not at her best, as you know, right? I mean, she hasn't slept. She's still puking. You have to go over and over.
Look, as chief investigator on her case, it's important that I go over everything myself.
A name appears. Detective James Barry.
So, he climbs up the balcony. Springs a lock with his credit card. He's watched you, your habits, this place. He knows you sleep with the lights on. He turns them off as he goes. He takes a $20 bill from the coffee table. Helps himself to the unopened scotch under the kitchen sink. Grabs one of the kitchen knives. Gets that shawl from the closet. Cuts two eye holes. The mask. He turns out the bedroom light. Gets into bed behind you. You don't wake up. It's hot. He's very, very careful. He knows what he's doing. He puts the knife to your throat, shakes you awake, and he says,
"Do what I say and I won't hurt you." Do you have any idea who he is?
No. But his M.O., stranger on stranger rape in the victim's home, is extremely unusual. I think... you're the fifth victim of a serial offender we call a balcony rapist. And we think he lives in the neighborhood. He watches women, and he eventually attacks them in their beds.
Was I supposed to know this? I mean, because I'm a news junkie, you know, I pay attention to any advisor because I'm...
There's no way you could have known. It's a covert investigation.
Covert? I mean, you just aren't telling anybody.
We go public, we tip him off. He moves on just to start up someplace else.
It's 100 degrees outside. I mean, everybody's sleeping with their balconies and windows wide open.
We will not catch him if
they need to know. They're in danger.
There's no point in getting women all hysterical.
Hysterical? Okay. So it's better that the rape.
You know what? If you don't warn the women around here that we're all sitting ducks, I will.
Detective Barry levels his gaze.
You do any such thing, and I will look at having you arrested.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
It's interference with a police investigation. Just, you know, we're on it. Let us do our job. We'll get him. You keep any spare keys around here?
No.
Because sometimes this type will take them. Come back the easy way. He might phone, you know, to apologize. Make sure you're feeling okay. You get any funny calls, you notice anything unusual, you call me. Or my co-lead investigator, Detective Long. Day or night, don't even hesitate. Take good care of yourself, eh?
As he leaves, the woman stares after him. Now on a sidewalk, the woman hands out flyers with Cherie. The flyers read, "Rapist in this area."
Keep your doors and windows locked, ladies.
Not a problem.
Would you like to know what's going on? Sir, you don't want to know what's going on here? Just there's a serial rape, so you may pick it up.
Nearby, two cops watch from their patrol car.
You want to know what's going on in your neighborhood? The cops say we'll panic, ladies!
The woman joins another friend with more flyers. Someone bumps her, and the woman shudders, then smiles to herself. Wearing jeans, a sleeveless t-shirt, and lots of silver bracelets, she steps up to the police car.
Hey, guys. Do you know about this?
She shows them a flyer. Then she leans into the car window and smiles at the cops. Grinning, she runs back to Cherie and hugs her. As they stand on the crowded sidewalk, a man bumps into her. The man looks back with a confused stare. The woman covers her mouth with her hand as her friends gather around.
Anybody out here could be him.
I wouldn't know that. He could be watching me right now.
The woman walks away from Cherie, then kneels down and vomits. Cherie rubs the woman's back and kneels down beside her. The woman catches her breath and covers her face with her hand. Fade to black. Now in an office.
I did drift off yesterday. Woke up and couldn't feel anything from my neck down, and I thought I'd had a stroke. The doctor at emergency asked if I'd been in an accident recently. Stress-induced paralysis. Also, I can't seem to cry.
The woman's doctor hands her a prescription.
I know you hate pills. You have to sleep.
Well, you'll have to do more than shake me to wake me up next time.
A name appears, Dr. Vincent DeMarco.
To the prognosis for the rest of me.
You need specialized rape trauma therapy.
I'm not going to sit around holding hands and passing tissues, okay? I'll be fine once they catch the
guy. If they catch him, if they convict him. It doesn't change the fact that you were raped. And you're locked home in your own bed? It's going to take years before you feel safe anywhere.
Now, in her apartment, the woman answers her phone.
Hello? Hello?
She hangs up. She takes out a prescription bottle and fills a mug with water.
Hello?
She hangs up. Later, she secures the locks on her front door. Later, she makes a call.
Detective James Barry, now, please. I really appreciate you coming over so quickly.
She and Barry smoke cigarettes.
The place is clean. Nobody outside but some faggots.
A name appears. Detective Donald Long.
In the bushes.
They're called homosexuals, Don. They're having sexual intercourse. Sorry, that's such a disappointment to you.
You know, you politically correct types are going to have to learn. Nice words don't change nasty business.
And to think in all my years of protesting our treatment of sluts, fruits, and commie pinkos, I never tolerated the word pigs when the cops were called in.
Hey, look, come on. We're all really, really tired here.
No. What's the problem here? Where is the man who raped me tonight?
Maybe you got a flyer. Took off.
Have you given any more thought to relocating? Look, I know this is your home, but is it good for you staying here?
Did the others move? How are they coping?
I can't discuss them. Rules of evidence.
Now in an office area.
You're the only sexual assault care center in the city. You're the only one who knows, besides the police, who the others are.
The Rape Shield Law protects the identity of women who've been raped, and the rules of evidence prohibit victims comparing notes.
I hate that word, victims. We're not dead. Give us the dignity of choosing our own ways to deal with this. Give us some control. I don't want to talk to the other women about the rapes. I want to talk about our treatment by the police.
It's taken decades to build the police cooperation we've got now.
They're making it worse for me. These rapes are extremely unique. Four other women know exactly what it's like to be terrorized by a strange man in our own beds, to then fall into the care of more strange men who have all the sensitivity of doorstops. We could comfort each other in a way I know no one else can.
I said I can't help you.
Then give them my number.
She writes down her phone number.
Sorry, can I just, you let them decide. All right? If you're really here to help us.
Now, in a restaurant, the woman meets another woman with short brown hair.
I didn't know there were others.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know if they caught the ass or what.
Oh, no, not yet.
I've been a basket case since this happened, you know?
Yeah.
He's gonna win, eh? He'll send me right over the edge. I can feel myself slipping. I can't help it. It's just like looking in a mirror. Have you heard from the other three girls?
No, not yet. Just you, but I'm so grateful you called.
Yeah, well, I'm a bad girl, see? Your cops called me. First word I had since December. And they tell me that
yours
I
was in December? Yours was 9 months ago?
Well, I was seeing a couple different guys, right? So the pigs are like, well, she's a slut. You know, they look at my place. Oh, look at all the porno she's got. And oh my God, there's a dildo in her underwear drawer.
That has nothing to do with your rape.
I wasn't raped. I was confused. I had something kinky get a little too rough, more like. They didn't even fingerprint, which I know they do, because the next one he got lived on the floor above me, and the super said she got blown off, too. How about you? Jeez.
Oh. I got a whole parade.
Yeah, well, nice lady, nicer building.
So, why'd the cops finally call you?
To say if you found me, to give you the stiff one.
If
that
I found you,
you were a troublemaker jeopardizing...
Excuse me.
That you're jeopardizing the investigation.
Called about me?
Now in a theater.
Chief Morris, although it's 1986, my police disbelieve some women who report their rape.
Wearing dark glasses, the woman reads to an audience.
And my police tell me I will certainly become hysterical.
1986.
When I call to tell my police I'm scared...
I need reassurances they're serving and protecting
me. It's time to change police training, education, and protocol. Where violence against
women...
Yours sincerely, Jane Doe 5, of the unsolved balcony rapist case.
Cherie stands in front of a banner reading, Stop Violence Against Women.
Representatives of the Police Services Board were invited to join us tonight to respond to this Jane Doe. Gentlemen.
She gestures to a panel with place cards and empty chairs.
Is this what the police think of rape?
As the lights come up, a woman approaches Jane Doe.
You were great.
Oh, thank you.
Listen, I'm with the Toronto Sun. Can I talk to you for a minute?
I'm doing this work to demand change, not to become some poster girl for rape for the Toronto Sun.
But the whole city should hear what you said.
We need to be protected! We want to be protected!
I can't be identified.
Your anonymity is protected by law. You'll still be Jane Doe. You'll be the Jane Doe.
Now, a headline reads, Jane Doe slams Metro cops. In her apartment, Jane Doe reads the article to Cherie.
No general warning was issued and acknowledge one should have been. It's a matter not only for concern and regret, but action.
Scans like a declaration of war to me.
What?
We're agitating, not attacking. You keep your friends close, your enemies
closer.
They're
offering us joint committees, community consultations.
Apologies. No balcony rapist arrest, no reason why no arrest.
Well, I think they got
PR,
the message.
Political response,
they're
and
dealing
talk.
With the right girl at the wrong time, in the wrong place.
They give you a lollipop, they shut you up.
You got the front page.
I'll bet James Barry is just thrilled for you.
He hasn't returned my calls. But they don't know it's me. I'm anonymous by law.
They're detectives. They've met you. They'll figure it out.
Now, at night, Jane Doe sits at a desk littered with reports and documents. As she reads, she marks the text with a highlighter. She shudders, then slowly approaches her locked balcony door. She hurries back across the room and picks up the telephone.
52nd Division, can I help you?
Yes, there's something going on outside my apartment. Noises below my balcony. Can
someone... What kind of noises?
I'm a Doe in the balcony rapist case. Detective Barry...
Are you in any immediate danger?
Well, I don't know, but Detective Barry told me to call. But he may be coming back.
I can't come over for just anything. I'm sorry, we're very busy.
October 1986.
Let it get personal.
It is personal.
Mm-hmm. Then you're even more vulnerable. It's not enough that Buddy is still out there somewhere. No, you gotta spend every waking moment studying, dissecting, critiquing the perversified system that enables him. Is this helping?
You know, when I get scared, I get mad.
Is it healing?
I don't want to heal. I want to fight. I want to fight for a little control over what is happening to me, to women like me. Listen, you mother...
She listens to the telephone.
Oh, my God.
As she listens, she looks at Cherie.
It's James Barry. They arrested a guy in the cafe. He said you called me. He's being charged with all five rapes.
Cherie embraces her.
Oh, God.
Fade to black.
I thought you said that he confessed.
His lawyer begs to differ.
We need a positive ID to keep him.
But I told you I didn't see his face, right?
But you heard his voice.
There are five men in a booth next door. You'll listen to each one. You don't speak. You don't interrupt.
Can they hear me?
No.
Can't James be?
He's not allowed. Lady, you may have downtown at your beck and call, but in my unit, I tell you what's going to work. A man's life is at stake here.
He leans toward a microphone.
All set. Line them up by the numbers.
They listen to a speaker.
Do what I say and I won't hurt you. Do what I say and I won't hurt you. Do what I say and I won't hurt you.
Jane Doe dry heaves and covers her mouth.
Do what I say and I won't.
Do what I say and I won't hurt you.
Now you can ask by the numbers.
Number three.
Do what I say and I won't hurt you.
Jane vomits and bolts from the room. Detective Barry brings her a trash can. Gently, he guides her away. Now Jane waits in another office. Gazing at a crowded bulletin board, she spots a glossy cutout of a bikini model. Detectives Barry and Long walk in.
You got him. You identified our man.
He's down for 13 counts. The five rapes, the unlawful confinements, assaults with a dangerous weapon, the four other girls' B&Es, and possession of a dangerous weapon. He had a knife on him at the bust. I only wish the bastard had resisted arrest.
Can he get bail?
Very unlikely.
But not impossible.
You've made this a very high-profile case. Nobody's going to want to do this scum any favors.
The newspaper said he lives one block from my house. If he gets out, I want to know who I'm looking for. Is there a mugshot?
I can't show you his face if you didn't see him at the crime. Rules of evidence.
Donnie, why don't you go see if you can organize a ride for him?
Detective Long shoots Jane Doe a stare, then leaves. Detective Barry stubs out his cigarette.
You know, when we asked him about you, he says, oh, yeah, the one I got the $20 from.
Yeah, 20 from my coffee table.
Barry moves a file folder so it faces her.
Look, the Crown Attorney's going to be in touch with you about testifying at the hearing. Excuse me.
He stands up and walks across the room. Jane Doe glances down at the file on his desk. She opens the cover and studies the first page. She closes the file as Barry returns with a cup of water. He sits down and Jane faces him.
Thank you, James.
Now, January 1987.
Well, you're enjoying a legal rarity, an expeditious proceeding.
Yes, I appreciate we're very fortunate.
Yes, well, today we're preparing your testimony for something called a preliminary inquiry.
To make sure that there's enough evidence to take it to a grand jury. You know, I love L.A. law.
You're watching too much American television. There's no such thing as a grand jury in Canada. It's a preliminary inquiry. First, procedures. The day you testify, you wait outside until called. You talk to no one but officers of the court.
But will the other four women be there?
The rules of evidence strictly prohibit your interaction, lest you taint each other's testimony. Uh-huh. I emphasize, forbid.
Hey, I just asked if they'd be there.
When you're dismissed, you leave.
Oh, no, I'll be joining you.
In the hearing?
Mm-hmm.
Impossible.
Why not? It's my rape. It's my trial.
But it's not. In rape, the Crown prosecutes on your behalf. You're a witness, you're a victim, your body is evidence. But you're not considered in any way by the court a participant in the action.
Now in a courtroom.
Entrenched courtroom custom aside, there are absolutely no legal, moral, or ethical grounds for the exclusion of a woman from the hearing of the man who raped her.
If she had been, she seems pretty good for a freebie.
Yeah. We would fully accept that she has no one would do this. The point was too contentious. She's too young to care.
And the she's good.
That permits this prehistoric tradition to stand.
Your Honor.
Gentlemen, I gather you both object.
Strenuously, Your Honor, defense counsel is concerned for the impact a grieving victim may have on the atmosphere of these proceedings.
The rights of the accused must be paramount. This rule has never been contested. Why risk appeal on something so trite?
Because justice must not only be done, sir, it must be seen to be done. And it must be seen to be done by Jane Doe. So with the exception of the other women's testimonies and full observance of the rules of evidence, she may attend this hearing as an observer.
Jane hugs Cherie and her lawyer. Now at the preliminary inquiry, Jane takes notes.
Detective Sergeant, you say each assault was nearly identical. Can you elaborate?
First, all the M.O.s, the way the crimes were perpetrated, matched. Very unusually perpetrated compared to most sexual assaults. Balcony entry to the victim's home. Second or third story apartment. Always single, dark-haired women living alone. Four of whom had reported a break and enter shortly before the attack, which usually occurred on or around the 25th of the month. Three of the five lived within 500 meters of the Church and Wellesley intersection. Two of them lived in the same building. The farthest away was two blocks.
And that's not all the victims shared.
They could have been sisters. Their physical descriptions were very similar. They frequented the same places in the area in his comfort zone. So he was after a very specific kind of woman.
How many elements in total did the five victims and their assaults have in common?
I'd say about 100.
When did you first realize you were dealing with a serial predator?
We connected two in July. By August 16th, we'd connected the first four.
And this was the 24th. So they knew.
We targeted
Cherie and Jane traded a glance.
The area that met the profile. And we set up surveillance for those starting the last week of the month.
So they knew someone at your address might be raped.
You may,
6 days
down.
Before you were. 6 days.
Your Honor, a moment, please.
Jane glances up. An attorney steps toward the judge.
Your Honor, my client is elected to waive his rights to this proceeding by altering his plea to guilty on all counts.
Mr. Callow, you will be remanded to custody pending sentencing. Court is adjourned.
A lawyer picks up her briefcase.
She should sue the cops for not warning her, I would.
Jane gapes. As Callow walks out, his wrists handcuffed, Detectives Barry and Long shake hands. Now, as Jane Doe leaves the courthouse, reporters with microphones surround her.
You're not allowed to take a break. Can you please hold on?
Has this changed your opinion of the police?
Jane Doe, has this changed your opinion of the police?
Jane Doe, has this changed your opinion of the police?
I should have been warned. I was raped 1 week after the police knew exactly who was at risk. It was a very particular type of woman. It was a very tiny area in a building they knew was a target. They sat outside watching the night I was raped. They didn't serve or protect me. They didn't warn me. They used me as bait to catch a serial rapist. And I'm going to sue them.
Can we get through?
She pushes past them. Several months later, Jane meets with lawyers.
Oh, you can't sue the institution here. You can only sue individuals who took the actions on its behalf that caused your damages.
No, the whole point is it's systemic. I mean, it's not about James or Donald. It's about the way they were trained to think and the rules they had to follow.
And we have to present the claim in terms the court will recognize, or they won't take it seriously. And proving the police were negligent because they're sexist will, we think, be more expensive than you may realize.
But the brochure says your services are free.
Well, there are other costs to making legal history in this country. Precedent-setting cases can take years. And without the other does, you are going to bear the full brunt of their displeasure alone.
I don't care. You know, what happened to me can't happen to anyone else.
Well, you're not only taking on the police. City Hall has a vested interest in making sure its citizens are protected. All other policing agencies will support this force to defend their own practices. The courts themselves rely by necessity on the soundness of police judgment. You are challenging the integrity of the entire legal system, and that system will defend itself by any means necessary.
2 years later in court, a name appears, Jeremy Sharp, QC.
Of press-hungry radicals and professional mischief-makers.
Our repeated requests to review police material relevant to the investigation in question have so far gone unanswered.
Our clients have not provided materials to further this discussion because the identities of the victims are confidential. The case is closed, Your Honor, and this discussion in itself is irrelevant.
Leader.
As it is the business of any legal action to discover if compelling evidence may be produced for argument, this case may proceed.
Jane and Cherie hug. Sharp stands.
Notice of our intent to appeal.
3 years later.
Do you want to know what I did this week?
Jane meets with her lawyers.
I declined my dream job because I didn't think I was up to it. And a nice man asked me out. I told him to go screw himself. And then I tell my parents that, yes, in fact, I am clinically depressed, but...
Jane's hair is dyed red.
It's only because Mike Harris got elected. You know, everything that I do now is based on the lie. And I'm just tired.
We're doing our best.
You let them treat me like a crackpot with a nuisance case. Yeah. You've become as much a part of the systemic bull as the cops. Please, you don't move in this case without covering your asses first.
This is the toll we warned you about, the time. Getting through it on your own. Frankly, we think for your sake, we ought to consider an alternative.
No settlement.
What we're recommending is that you drop the charter rights violations portion of the case.
Jane stares at her.
It's in your best interest.
But this is the discrimination. Is the whole point.
We can get to trial with what we have on hand on negligence in 2 years. Proving sexism could take 5.
Negligence just means that all it means is they can claim a few officers screwed up in one case when the whole thing is pervasive. And it continues, and women who are raped suffer for this. And only a charter argument can prove that.
Well, excuse us for valuing your well-being over making legal history.
Her eyes moist with tears, Jane covers her mouth.
Oh, so much for sisterhood, eh?
Shaking her head, she picks up her briefcase.
No, you know what? You can just send my files and my briefs and my evidence to my apartment. Because you know what? You're fired. No one even returns my calls. I could have gotten my own damn law degree myself.
Your voice down?
Now, Jane and Cherie enter a nightclub.
So, the people tonight, they know lawyers, right?
Yeah, but you said you were coming because you needed a night out. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, the owner gave me my job running this place. My clients are in here, okay?
So they have money. They know lawyers.
They buy art. They fund museums. They chat Rodin, not rape.
Oh, dear. You know what? I'll have to add the names to my coffee table book of rape gift list.
You know, you really don't need to fight the cops because you have become your own worst enemy.
That's not funny.
Do me a favor this once. Leave Jane Doe at the door. Or don't come in.
She walks off.
Leave her at the door.
Cherie stops.
Did I tell you about his sweat, Cherie? How it poured off him?
And wonder where your friends went.
Jane gapes and Cherie walks away. Jane turns as Paul Callow's attorney approaches.
Hey, Jane Doe! We met! I'm Paul Callow.
Yeah, I know. You don't forget your rapist defense lawyer.
Hey, how's your case going?
She heads for the door, then turns back.
You know, actually, I'm looking for new representation. You wouldn't happen to know anyone appropriate?
Well, not unless you're still discriminating against men.
Oh, sorry. That case.
He takes out a business card.
Have you ever met Sean Dewart?
No, never heard of him.
Ah, he's a Bay Street boys boy, rebel without a cause. You know,
He asked me about you just last week.
Yeah? So what did he ever do to you?
I cross-examined a client. Bloodbath.
Jane takes the card and strides out. Now she enters the law office.
Can you hold, please? Lady McMurtry, can you hold, please? Lady McMurtry, can you hold, please?
Hi. I have a 2 o'clock wish from Duart.
Yes, of course.
Jane strokes her hair nervously as she follows a woman into an office.
Great, thanks.
The woman leaves and Jane sits at a desk alone. A mountain bike leans propped against one wall. A 30-ish man enters wearing short sneakers and a t-shirt.
Hi, Chandra.
What? You're kidding me, right?
I reviewed what you sent over. Your previous lawyers did some good work. It's just starved for resources, bodies, money, time. That'll take 2 years and $200,000, but I'll win the case.
You know, I teach, I work in the arts. I don't have money, so...
Relax. We're overdue for a pro bono. All right, let's talk schedules. I want to set up a meeting to get these case files from the investigation sent over. Right now I'm in court on something. Be over in a week.
So you're awfully sure of yourself, aren't you?
Oh, you know, I like winning. Looks good on me. Here's the press book on the Doe case. I flag it for the Callow trial stuff. Barry Golden, the Jane Doe.
Wow.
Hi.
Hey, your action was my first case study in law school. Big fan.
That's so depressing.
You know, basically, we're just about set, except...
Except I haven't given you the job yet.
Except we're mainly experienced with negligence cases. Your charter argument requires an expert in gender and equality issues for the systemic discrimination argument.
Yeah, we're going to get someone to co-chair that.
Yeah, that's crucial for constructing an argument that kills any suggestion you're some fringe element with a beanie bonnet looking to cash in on a personal tragedy. You see, the police cannot be allowed to ever successfully argue that this is about you and you alone. All right, this is about all women.
You're quoting my last interview.
Just like in the last interview. He's no, paraphrasing.
No disrespect, but, I found it verbose.
Jane gives a skeptical stare as Sean walks over to his desk and sits down.
So why do you want this case?
The police force is just another evil empire. I like taking them down.
Sean munches on a gummy worm.
Okay, you get me the charter lawyer I really want. I'll give you the case.
All right. What's his name?
Later, they meet with a woman. A name appears. Cynthia Peterson. Sean whispers to Eric.
To prove discrimination by a state organization, in this case, the police, you have to show an identifiable group, in this case, women, were declined equal service and protection other members of the society enjoy as a matter of course. It's the cops' word against yours and the quality of service and protection you received. So what we need is other women who will testify to similar experiences in identical circumstances.
The cops claim that they can't locate the other three does that ran away.
The fourth's in and out of a loony bin. Mm.
Can't we argue exactly that, though, Cynthia, that I'm alone because it's rape?
In principle, yes, but we still need proof. For instance, in-house documents, paper trail, showing decisions were made based upon sexism and the poor training on rape that led to your rape. Show them in circulation all through the system, unchecked, unchallenged, uncorrected by peers, and especially
okay,
superiors.
So many screw-ups. All ranks on paper.
Later.
We want incident reports on every rape reported to 52 Division in 1986. All 911 logs. All interdepartment communications on the balcony rapist case. Police service board meeting minutes back through to 1975. Duty rosters. Officers' service records and resumes. Training course outlines.
You realize it will take you months to review this amount of material?
I suggest you save all your passive-aggressive attempts to rankle my client for the courtroom back with. You can need all the help you can get.
He's trying to do you a favor, Jurt. Muck around in all the police files you like. You won't find anything you can use.
The MTPF sexual assault investigations have been considered cutting edge by international law enforcement agencies for years, even back in 1986.
What? The police blindly backing the police? Yeah, I'm shocked. You know, my innocence is gone. I want these materials by week's end.
Well, I'll have to consult with the constabulary to see if they can afford the time to waste on short notice.
You've had 8 years, Jeremy.
Sharp frowns at Sean.
Don't worry, Jurt. We'll give you what you're asking for. We fully appreciate the difficulty of what you've stepped into.
Oh, there's nothing difficult about being in the moral, ethical, and legal right. But perhaps that is coming as news to you, gentlemen.
Sean grins, then walks over to Beckwith.
Mr. Beckwith.
Mr. Durham. Mr. Sean.
Jane watches as the attorneys shake hands.
Golden.
Mr.
Peterson.
Jane smirks at Sharp.
Gentlemen.
He gives her a level nod, then walks out. Smiling, Jane gives Sean a hug.
Been good?
Later, Eric Golden reads files.
This is January. No, this is December 1985. Investigating officer writes motive slash reason for attack is sexual gratification. Okay, this one is January 86. Different officer, exact same motivation, sexual gratification. Oh, pictures in June of 86. Oh, and listen to this. He writes, victim is hostile and uncooperative.
You know, look at these photos. They don't even photograph her balcony.
They were more interested in evidence of their sex lives than the crime.
Yeah, they also didn't speak to any of the men the women had made mention of to, quote, spare these guys the embarrassment. Elected not to interview building super or boyfriend as believed. Incident will be cleared with a public mischief charge.
You know, they thought she staged it to make her boyfriend jealous.
Oh, shit. Listen to this. Formal request from James Barry to his unit's officer in charge. Dated the same day that he met you at your apartment. He wants extra officers to canvass the targeted buildings, but, quote, they should not mention anything about sexual assault at this time. They should make notes of any single females living in the apartment and report their apartment numbers.
That's proof they used women as bait. Do we have anything from ranks higher than responding officers?
No, not yet, but, I mean, if the attitude is this pervasive on the front lines, they're going to be rotten all the way through,
yeah,
right?
So if the cops think that this is acceptable, you know, why wouldn't the courts? Don't you think it would be helpful to have someone whose opinion they respect, you know, someone who can explain in their terms why this is so wrong?
Yeah, we need an insider. We need a cop. We need a cop.
Testifying on police procedure in general, that's one thing.
Now, Professor James Hodgson talks on the phone.
I shared a coffee pot with these guys, talking against my own unit. I'd be lucky to get out of Toronto alive.
Yeah, I understand that.
Give me the phone.
Okay, hang on a minute.
Jane takes the phone.
Hi, Jim.
Yeah,
the one and only. Listen, I just had to tell you this. Your last book completely validated my experience up here. You know, I loved it. Especially when you talk about community policing being called impression management behind closed doors. That's so true.
Then you must understand me. It's a paramilitary mindset.
Don't blow.
They will resist any challenge that could compromise their exclusive control over their organization. Jane, I left for a reason.
But you retired to teach them.
Okay. Okay, my insurrection is safely academic.
You know, I'm not saying that any of your old pals are bad guys. I'm not blaming them. It's their environment. You know, you said it yourself. Sexism in the force is just about a system refusing to change to its own detriment. I think you never really walked away because you want to make a difference. And, you both know they'll never read your book, Jim.
Only a safe place to stay.
We still have a few things on our pre-trial shopping list, Jude.
Now the lawyers meet.
We require a full list of all feminist books read by your client prior to her rape. A detailed work history, with references, of course. Her Ontario health insurance plan records, tax returns filed, assuming they were, from 1980. Medical and therapist's notes prior to the rape. And a full psychiatric examination with our forensic psychologist. You may have heard of him, Dawson, Robert Dawson.
One of the guys the Crown might consult to Lever deals with sex killers?
At your client's earliest convenience. Gentlemen, ladies.
Sharp and Beckwith walk out. Sean closes the door behind them.
Yes, guess who just woke up and smelled certain defeat? Sean. You just saluted burning our client as a witch.
Forensic psychology for the Crown's been about as female-friendly as foot-binding.
Oh, come on, they're just trying to intimidate her. It's not going to work. Unless they can prove that she suffered any of the damages we're claiming before the rape.
Jane gets up and hurries out. Biting his lip, Sean stares up at the ceiling. Sean rushes out after her.
Did she? You just let them put me on trial.
They have a right to examine your claim. This is not a rape trial. You don't have to say...
No, the police cannot ever be allowed to argue that this is about you and you alone. Who said that? You said that day one.
Right, listen to me. Are there any damages in our claim that you suffered before the rape?
That shouldn't matter.
Were you raped before?
Doesn't matter.
Were you raped before?
Were you raped before? It doesn't matter. No, I wasn't raped before.
All right, so why are you letting them scare you now?
Who's going to complain in the future knowing they can do this? They can publicly eviscerate you. They can parade your guts around. They can let everybody judge you. It becomes another rape.
Listen... All right, you don't cooperate. We're not making full disclosure. They're going to have the case dismissed.
Jane screams at him.
No!
She turns away, her hands over her face, then composes herself and glares at Sean.
Yeah, well, lucky for you, my life before this was fantastic.
Dawson interviewed day one. A gray-haired woman observes.
Expect total privacy.
She's here to make you feel more comfortable and to provide us both with some protection against any misinterpretation of the process.
Right.
Are you afraid of people?
No. I mean, I have a healthy fear of man, which, you know, every woman has. It's even healthier since my rape.
As Dawson scribbles notes, the woman gazes at Jane.
Were you a happy teenager?
Jane fidgets.
Were you?
I am not being examined here.
But don't you find it strange that I am? I mean, instead of the people being charged in the case?
Just answer the question, please.
What's the question again?
Sunshine.
Later, she twirls her bright red hair.
Premature aging.
Rain.
Waterproof mascara.
Dog.
What do sex killers say when they hear dog?
Dawson stares at her, his lips pressed together tightly.
Dog.
Day two.
So after your rape, you claim you suffered Still from the following suffer. Symptoms. Sleeplessness, recurring nightmares, chronic stomach upset, medication-induced tics.
I have been examined by rape experts. Dr. Rosemary Barnes, leading rape psychologist, she'll be testifying that my experience is not unlike Vietnam vets. Only worse, because a soldier has some expectation of what he might experience, whereas I could not.
Are you comparing yourself to a Vietnam vet?
We do share a similar affliction, yes.
Later, Dawson shows her a series of ink blots.
Vagina. Vagina. Gee, another vagina.
Now, Sean reads a report.
Mixed personality disorder. Grandiose sense of self-importance. Attention-seeking behavior. She describes the actions of the police in an almost delusional way. Trouble moving on due to litigation, which she initiated. Conditions likely existing prior to rape.
Nobody in their right mind is going to take this obviously transparent attempt to assassinate my character seriously.
Cynthia looks down. Sean stares at Jane.
Or, you know, so you'd think.
Oh, man. Don't start with the tone.
Sean.
Look. The record, all right? Nobody here thinks you're nuts, or that seeing a shrink before you were raped means you were screwed up anyway.
Yeah, because I guess those damning stares confused me.
I mean, it's bad enough he'll claim you were damaged before the rape. Now he gets to insinuate you were a lunatic as well.
Oh, Sean, that's
enough. Oh, come
on.
You knew what he was looking for. You knew every piece of rape stereotype that he could muster against you, but what did you do?
I applied my notorious sense of humor.
No, you lashed out at him, at them. I mean, you had a chance to make sure that they got nothing on you, but you had to make a statement.
Jane swallows hard, then licks her lips.
And all the cops are going to be lined up to watch me twist in the wind.
All right, so what do we got?
Well, Vince DeMarco's treating her before and after the rape, and he says that he can refute anything that Dawson says.
I've started sowing Dawson's attitude through the written argument to demonstrate blame the victim thinking.
And the media ban on publishing her identity has been extended for the length of the trial.
Now Jane watches TV in her apartment. She sits curled up on her couch, a blanket pulled over her legs.
Lottery numbers coming up, but first the news. Because they are easy, visible differences have been the primary ways of organizing human beings into superior...
Jane crawls across the couch and picks up the phone. She dials a number, then holds the phone to her ear.
Come to the newsroom, please.
Now, a headline reads, Cops Blame Serial Rape Victim.
I told the world, oh, here's what happens when you stand up to our police force.
Nothing. Sean paces in front of her.
As long as they're allowed to terrorize, and I'm not going to help anybody cover this up. The media sensationalizes rape, and I took advantage of that to get the truth.
You know what? You've made your own motivation suspect.
Eric enters.
The switchboard's going nuts. We have a comment.
No. It's former residents of Church and Wellesley. They all saw the article and they all want to testify for Jane Doe.
Now a woman speaks on videotape. A name appears. Pat Tioli.
That whole summer, 1986. One night I caught him cutting the screens off my windows. Cops never said anything to me about a serial rapist. I realized it was this Callow guy when I saw his picture with the article. He used me as bait too.
I reported a break-in to...
Another video interview. Lori Martin.
Just a block away from you in September 1986. The police told me it was the balcony rapist. Then they told me to hide my knives. Then I let them use my place for a stakeout. I went to a girlfriend's. I feel terrible. I thought they were doing me a favor. But then when I read that they were just waiting to see him do it to someone else, and what they were doing to you now for saying that was wrong, I was sick to my stomach. I'm convinced the only reason they warned me is because you were on their backs. You saved me from being Doe 6.
Another interview, Robin Avery.
I was living in the building next door to you. Someone kept unscrewing the light bulb over our rear entry. I'd screw it back in. This went on for weeks. One night, I was putting it back in, and this guy reached out from the bushes and grabbed my wrist. He said, would I leave the damn light alone, that he was a police officer on a stakeout, and I was interfering with his operation.
All right, so the surveillance report on that guy Robin Avery's building reads, just the usual homosexuals and whores. And Lori Martin's incident report reads, good-looking girl living alone, we just thought she should know. So the cops didn't connect the Peeping Toms to Callow, even though being a Peeping Tom was one of the primary elements of the rape profile they used to ID him.
There are more. All willing to testify.
You're not alone anymore.
Swallowing deeply and running a hand through her hair, Jane looks around at her legal team.
Get me a court date.
Now, September 9th, 1997, Jane stands outside a courthouse near protesters.
Hello. A woman we can only identify as Jane Doe is asking Justice Jean McFarlane to find the Metro Toronto Police Force responsible for the crimes committed against her.
Nearby, Sean and Eric wear black robes. Cherie walks past protesters. Spotting Jane, Cherie smiles and spreads her arms. She blinks back tears as she takes Jane's hand.
Behold the great Canadian coward. Why don't you start talking like an Arts Council lit bitch?
I am one. You know, it turns out you quit the St. Jane fan club.
Cherie puts a hand on Jane's shoulder.
Karma bites back. You know, you get this nice, safe, ineffectual life.
She cups Jane's chin.
I'm sorry.
Jane's eyes go moist with tears as Cherie gives her a hug.
I'm terrified.
It's time.
Cynthia, wearing a black counselor's robe, nods to Jane. Jane and Cherie follow her into the courthouse.
You know, we've got a lot of press.
A guard steps in front of Jane.
Yes.
Sit down.
Cynthia, I know, I'm with them.
She points at her lawyers.
Guys, I want to sit with the grown-ups.
You can't.
This is intimidation.
Keep your voice down.
Oh, I'm sorry, am I embarrassing you? Right, I forgot. You put on your big boy pants for these people, didn't you?
Sean walks away. Scowling, Jane Doe walks over to the gallery and takes a seat near Cherie.
Would you please calm down, please?
You know what? I cannot see.
As she glares at the guard in front of her, Detective Barry walks up.
Is this man bothering you?
And James. Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is a little uncomfortable.
Barry talks to the guard.
Maybe you could just cut him a little slack, huh?
The guard nods and walks off. Detective Barry squats down next to Jane.
You do know that I never wanted to name you in all of this, right? I didn't. You're always very nice to me.
All rise.
Yeah.
Jane watches with a sad expression as Barry walks off.
Jane Doe versus the Board of Commissioners of Police for the Municipality of Metropolitan Toronto. Former Police Chief Jeff Morris, Donald Long, and James Barry is now in session. Justice Jean McFarlane presiding.
The spectators and the lawyers take their seats. Judge McFarlane addresses the courtroom.
Any housekeeping matters before we get started? No. Mr. Dewart.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Sean speaks at a podium.
The Metro Toronto Police have broken the law. They were negligent in their sworn duty to protect and serve my client and other women like her in her neighborhood. They willfully violated her charter rights to personal safety and security because she is a woman. Now, they knew full well and by their own admission that there was a serial rapist terrorizing my client's neighborhood and that he had targeted women just like her. The police used these women as bait for a sexual predator. And because in 1986, the MTPF was steeped top to bottom in discriminatory attitudes about rape and women who are raped. And as a direct result of that rampant sexism, my client was brutally and repeatedly raped at knife point in her own bed. Consequences of which have permanently altered her quality of life. Thank you.
Later, Sean interviews a witness.
I was her psychologist for 4 years, before and after her rape.
So unlike the psychiatrist procured by the defense, you have long-term first-hand knowledge of my client's mental state before her rape. Does that explain the difference in opinion?
Well, using Dr. Dawson's methodology, you could conclude Mother Teresa's a deviant.
How so?
Well, his methodologies are irresponsible and dangerous.
Jeremy Sharp leans back with his hands behind his head.
For example, to find her a paranoid delusional because she said that the cops were out in the bushes with her rapist. I mean, it's equivalent of finding delusional the waitress that says the ham sandwich at table 12 wants his check. I mean, no responsible physician would suggest that waitress believes the person at table 12 is a ham sandwich.
Sharp sneers as he laughs.
What was your diagnosis of my client's mental state before her rape?
It's an adjustment disorder with mild depression. She was making very good progress.
And after her rape?
Major depressive disorder with post-traumatic stress syndrome. It's stemming directly from the sustained trauma being repeatedly raped at knife point. It's classic rape trauma syndrome.
Later.
Were you aware that you weren't the only therapist the plaintiff has seen?
Mm-hmm. I encouraged her to seek specialized treatment after a rape. Anyone would.
While maintaining your relationship?
Well, I was honored to be amongst the few she could still confide in and trust.
Beckwith.
Do you agree with the plaintiff that the police were sexist and negligent?
Well, based on her experience, I certainly do.
Is it possible that due to the length and the intensity of your relationship with the plaintiff, that you have been rendered something other than objective?
I resent that.
Objection.
You finish here, Your Honor.
Later.
These police reports all indicate classic rape mythology thinking. The genuine belief that women lie about being raped for attention to spite a lover. The sex toys are photographed to imply this woman asked for whatever happened to her. Or worse, they were taken because they merely titillated the officers involved.
I see. So the officers responsible for these reports are ignorant. Are they sexist?
Rape mythology, like most rape, is gender-specific, directed almost exclusively at women.
Later.
Dr. Jaffe, your professional expertise on rape and its associated disorders is impressive. You've proclaimed my client's attitudes sexist and ignorant. In your expert opinion, one question. Do you have any expertise on policing or criminal investigations procedures?
No, I do not.
I beg your pardon?
No, I do not.
Outside.
You let them imply that DeMarco was dating me, not treating me. You didn't even challenge Sharp's dismissal of Jaffe. I don't... They have completely discredited our authorities and my claims to damages.
They couldn't challenge DeMarco's expertise.
I think I want more time spent on credentials. And I want it said out loud in the room that the men that are testifying on my behalf aren't doing it from us. Because he's the only one who ever seemed to give a about what I was experiencing.
As Sean hurries inside, Professor Hodgson walks up. Policemen block his path. One bumps him.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Hey, Hodge!
From your old unit.
A bulletproof vest.
Guys, evidentiary submission 367. Anything else? Bribery? Extortion? No?
Jane throws the vest aside.
It's time to take the gloves off.
This might help. A copy of a memo I found in the basement. I don't know why I hung on to it 5 seconds ago.
Hodgson hands Jane a folded document. Now in court, Sean studies the document, then glances at Jane Doe. She wears her dark hair in a high bun with a fringe of bangs. Her glasses ride low on her nose.
Dr. Hodgson, you worked across the hall from these men in 1986. You're now a respected expert on the subject of police training, culture, and sexual assault. How would you describe the Criminal Investigations Unit of 52 Division in 1986 regarding the treatment of female complaints?
It was a poisonous environment, typically sexist and insensitive. Usually the wrong person, meaning whoever was available, was in charge of rape and sexual assaults.
But my friends here tell me that they had state-of-the-art training in that regard.
We had an optional 2-day course, grossly inadequate, in which officers were allowed to tell degrading jokes about women. Rape was routinely referred to as accidental intercourse or fraudulent behavior. Sexual assault cases were routinely backburnered in favor of processing frontline cases. Rape was on the same priority as obscene phone calls, B&Es, vandalism.
Mr. Hodgson, do you recognize this document?
A clerk hands the document to Hodgson.
Yes, it's the 1985 internal meeting minutes. from 52 Division's Criminal Investigations Unit.
Objection, we have not seen this material.
Your Honor, it's all from their own files.
We require time to review this.
Mr. Sharp, you have had over a decade to familiarize yourself with your own client's materials. Overruled.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Hodgson, would you please read the highlighted portion?
Hodgson turns pages.
For the record, we acknowledge the submitted concerns about complacency, uncaring, and disruptive attitudes, and a total lack of follow-up in rape and sexual assault cases.
Were any of these problems eliminated 1 year later in 1986?
No, they were not.
You were repeatedly denied promotion on the force, were you not?
No, I wouldn't say that.
You are a failure, Mr. Hodgson. Time after time, you failed to ascend through the ranks.
Twice in 10 years.
You're riddled with resentment, aren't you? It's safe to assume that you harbor some ill will towards this great force.
No.
Aren't you ashamed of yourself, Mr. Hodgson?
No, making me the rat here, pal. I left the day I pictured my wife or my daughter calling us for help, and their care depended on which ignorant ass happened to be working that night, and I didn't like the odds, and none of these guys should!
He jerks his thumb at the gallery where Detectives Barry and Long sit with a group of policemen.
I apologize, Your Honor. It's been an emotional time.
I'm through here, Your Honor.
You may step down, Doctor.
Now, Detective Barry.
Issuing a public warning meant alerting the rapist that we are onto him. He could have changed his M.O., he could have fled, only to rape elsewhere.
You'd already witnessed that phenomenon.
Yes.
Sorry, could you speak up?
Yes, we had.
Where? When? What were the circumstances?
That spring, the annex rapist left the city when our department issued a warning about his attack, so based on that, we decided to keep the balcony rapist investigation low-key.
Mr. Barry, is warning an identifiable group at risk of a crime police policy?
It was discretionary at the time.
You chose not to.
That's correct.
Laurie Martin.
Eric Golden makes notes as Sean reads.
Laurie Martin, your officers describe her as the good-looking girl living on her own. Used her place for a stakeout back in the September of 1986.
Yep.
Why?
She'd been burglarized in the target area. We believed it was Callow. We thought he'd come back to rape her.
Did you stake out the 300-some-odd other women who'd had B&Es in that target area that summer, or was it just the good-looking ones? Withdrawn. But Miss Martin had been told what this was about.
I wasn't there the day she reported.
Oh, Mr. Barry, you were in charge of the investigation. Yes, she had been told there was a serial rapist. She had been told to hide her knives. One rape in this investigation was prevented via warning. Now, is that not correct?
Suppose so, yes.
Fade to black.
When you realized you had a serial offender on your hands, and you linked the first four rapes, you expanded the scope and scale of your efforts to apprehend the offender because these heinous attacks on women were very serious for you and had to be stopped. Am I right?
We did everything we could, yes.
Can you tell me, do you recognize Exhibit 5?
Sean hands a document to Detective Long.
Yes, I do.
Because isn't this what your highly trained law enforcement professionals were actually doing during their state-of-the-art sexual assault investigation while Paul Callow stalked, raped, and terrorized at least five women that we know of?
We were preparing to go to trial at the time, yes.
On a province-wide ring of break and enters.
$2 million worth of stolen property was involved. It was a major interagency investigation.
It was very prestigious work playing with the RCMP. 15,000 exhibits, 1,500 photographs. The time, the thought...
Objection. Does counsel have a question?
Yes, I do. Supervising the 180 officers involved, reporting directly to Mr. Barry and yourself on the robbery ring, didn't the knife-wielding rapists take a backseat to this more prestigious case?
No, it did not. We always have hundreds of open cases. We did this, and we caught this guy and two other serial rapists that same summer.
I see. So you were overcommitted, but that doesn't mean that it was a low priority.
That's correct.
You don't think that you had a problem with the quality, or the priority, of police investigation into sexual assault?
I did not.
Was Mr. Callow arrested as a direct result of your investigation?
He was picked up on a tip.
Followed up by you or your partner?
By another officer working on the case.
That's right. That's right. Because his rap sheet indicated that... Kell had a long history of BNEs. He lived in the affected area and had been flagged as a probable association with at least 12 similar rapes in Vancouver.
Yes.
Because he was also a suspect here in Toronto. Is that not right? For similar crimes in 1985 and 1981?
Yes.
Mr. Long, do you consider the remarks and attitudes of your peers regarding the women's personal possessions, their behavior, their appearance, to be inappropriate or sexist in any way?
No, I do not.
Did you complete the sexual assault training program back in 1986?
No, I had not.
Do you think it would have been preferable to warn my client?
I regret that she was assaulted, okay? I'm sorry. But Callow's a predator. Who's going to be out there attacking regardless? And I don't think that you could physically secure downtown Toronto and prevent that. I'd love to give out all kinds of information. But I have a duty and a responsibility to the other Jane Does of the city to catch this guy. Which we did. This case was a success.
I'm sorry. My question was, would it have been preferable to warn my client rather than her be raped at knife point?
I don't think it matters whether it was a knife point or not.
Later in an office.
Their next witness was the co-lead investigator on the Onyx rapist case this same summer. He issued a warning.
He's also in internal affairs now.
Will that help us?
Now in court, Eric.
So, did you ever learn why your suspect fled?
He said he got spooked by a lurking scout car he spotted after one of his assaults.
So not as a result of your warning. So why did you issue the warning?
We had no suspects and no leads. The frequency of the attacks was escalating.
But they had no leads. They had no suspects. The frequency of their attacks was escalating. What's the difference?
The Annex rapist was beating and choking his victims. The difference was we thought he would kill somebody.
So the balcony rapist just breaking into women's homes and repeatedly raping them at knife point, that was not considered as serious a situation?
The decision to warn was discretionary.
What is that discretion based on?
It's a case-to-case situation.
Well, what are some of the factors that you consider?
The offender profile, the area affected.
The Annex being an upscale area, and Church and Wellesley being a largely low-income homosexual constituency.
Well, you're under a lot of public pressure in the Annex case.
Well, perhaps because, to your credit, the Annex residents were aware of the specific danger that they were in. In your opinion, with no leads, no suspects, and the frequency of attacks escalating, would it have been morally indefensible to sit back and hope for a break in any serial rape investigation?
It would have been more than morally indefensible. It would have been neglectful.
The judge makes a note. Later, Jane Doe's lawyers take off their robes.
We're so winning this.
I don't care if Dawson is their big gun after Dunny, the bad joke.
You're kidding me, right?
Where'd you go?
Dawson's last. If he gets away with saying I'm crazy to question the cops, we lose. No other women ever complain. We accomplish nothing.
I promise you, I've got Dawson sideways and backwards, and frankly, I can't wait.
You said it yourself. It's about doubt.
She throws a document onto a table.
Amazing what you can find out about a person if you're looking hard enough. If they have enough enemies.
Eric and Sean read a highlighted page over Cynthia's shoulder.
This is absolutely damning.
The broader social and political context.
By attacking personal motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Beat him senseless with it.
In court.
Doctor, what were your conclusions regarding the plaintiff's claims to psychological damages?
Several conditions she is attributing to her rape seem to predate the attack. This woman was in serious personality-related difficulties long before the assault.
The papers and Dr. DeMarco claim you also found her to be delusional. Is that correct?
No, my report said we found some of her behavior almost delusional. There's a difference. There's a spectrum.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
Just to clarify for my benefit, Doctor, isn't saying someone is almost delusional like saying someone is almost pregnant?
No, it's a point on the scale of dysfunction, short of delusional.
Short of meaning not delusional.
Yes.
Dr. Dawson, would you identify this book for the court?
Certainly, it's the DSM-4.
Which stands for?
Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 4th edition.
In your work, do you generally adhere to the diagnostic guidelines of DSM-4?
It's the definitive medical standard, yes.
These guidelines were used in your diagnosis of my client as suffering from mixed personality disorder and so on.
Yes.
It repeatedly cautions against hasty diagnosis of personality disorders. How long did you examine my client?
Several hours over 2 days.
Could your limited time with my client explain the difference between your findings of almost delusional and mixed personality disorders and those of her own long-term psychologist and rape crisis experts?
The point isn't what you call it. The point, I think, is whether it predated her rape.
Yes or no? Would it explain the fact that you clearly disagree with her own doctor?
Psychology is subjective, Miss Peterson. If you wish to dispute that, I'd be happy to step down right now.
He smiles. Cynthia sets down the manual and picks up a blue book.
The Canadian Medical Code of Ethics requires, quote, one to demonstrate appropriate compassion for the victims of male violence. Do you, Dr. Dawson?
Of course.
And your statement of fact from Regina versus Johnson, isn't it true that in 1991 you provided a privately solicited psychiatric report for a Mr. Johnson hours after he stabbed his wife, a woman who subsequently died of her injuries?
Objection. Relevance?
I'm working from Dr. Dawson's own report as filed in the statement, Your Honor.
Overruled. Answer the question, please.
Yes, at the request of his lawyer.
During your evaluation of Mr. Johnson, he confessed to you he was not sure his wife was dead, correct?
Well, he may have. It was 6 years ago.
Here's a copy of what you stated. You see, you said that he left her unconscious in the house with her two small children, correct? Christmas is coming, Doctor.
Judge McFarland peers over her glasses.
Yes, I said that.
And did you not feel at the time of this interview that you had an ethical obligation to contact the authorities so that someone might attend to his wife? Did you have any concern for the well-being of her children in the house with their dying mother's body?
There was an issue of confidentiality.
You could have placed an anonymous call to the authorities, could you not?
I was assured by his lawyer it was being taken care of.
So you felt your ethical duty to demonstrate the, quote, appropriate compassion for a victim of male violence was absolved by his lawyer.
Objection! Objection!
Goes the credibility of this expert's opinion of my client as another victim of male violence, Your Honor.
Sit down, Mr. Sharp.
His brow furrowed, Counselor Sharp takes his seat.
This was a long time ago, but my thinking at the time was that the poor woman was dead. There wasn't much to be done about it. There was no serious indication that the children were in danger. Look, I wasn't told that the man had not been charged.
I'm through with this one, Your Honor.
Cynthia sits down. In the gallery, Jane Doe's green eyes shine with tears.
Do you want to be laughed out of the courtroom?
I want to be heard on the issues.
This is not a political debate, all right? This is not a lecture. It's not a talk show. It is a trial where I ask you questions relevant to your claim. That's it.
It's my testimony. Ask me the questions.
In his office, Sean slouches on the sofa next to Cynthia, who studies a document. Jane hands Sean a piece of paper.
Describe how the sexist and systemic nature of the crime investigation impacted
crime
on you.
Crime and investigation impacted on you.
You know, after three straight weeks of moralizing testimony on your behalf, the judge doesn't care about your, big words or your feminist philosophies, all right? She just wants to hear that it was awful, okay?
Oh, you want me to cry and bleed on command?
Ruined your life, awful.
What social action will you extract for you? You are comfortable with pity? What, and rage is so unladylike.
She does this on the stand. We're finished.
Why? Because I have a brain in my head?
No, because you're trying to protect yourself by presenting some carefully controlled performance.
Well, have you ever got the smell from behind those big safe books? You can show me how it's done.
We're not on trial here.
Sure we are. Our experts were very clear. Jane Doe's incapable of trust.
Jane walks out. Sean leans closer to Cynthia.
She's a peach.
Now in court.
What effect did the rape have on your life?
Jane Doe sits in the witness box wearing a red plaid suit. She swallows hard.
I live in degrees of fear at all times since my rape. I suffer night terrors, which trigger stress-induced paralysis. I wake unable to move, so chronic sleeplessness. I have clinical depression, which I must medicate in order to function. The medications make me sick. I'm fearful of strangers in public places. This makes me distrustful. Some say difficult.
And what have these conditions cost you emotionally?
Any sense of control over my life. Any confidence in myself required to advance in my profession. That was lost to me for quite some time. Any joy in life.
Why were you seeking therapy before the rape?
Before the rape, I was in a 5-year relationship with a man that wasn't working out. I wanted to understand why. That relationship mattered a lot to me.
Are you still in that relationship?
No, it ended shortly after my rape.
After the rape, you continued therapy?
Yes, but it was different. I had no way of dealing with the devastation the rape caused me. My attitude toward everything had changed. Everything I could have been. My self-esteem was very low.
You've pursued post-rape therapy for 11 years now. Please answer yes or no.
Yes.
I submit copies, the receipts. And who paid for that therapy?
I did.
Only one more question. Please take your time. Why are you suing the police?
To seek the justice I need to heal myself. The police, my police, knew I personally was in specific danger. They chose to allow a serial rapist attacking women just like me to continue raping. They used me as bait to catch him in the act. That made more sense to them than protecting me asleep in my own bed. That shattered my life.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Sharp.
You must interrupt and tell me to stop if at any point you feel that I'm being unfair.
I don't suppose we could stop here.
Certainly, if you would like a mistrial.
Of course I do not.
I am confused. On August 24th, 1986, did the police not arrive promptly at the scene of the crime?
They did.
Did you not then call Detectives Barry and Long to your aid? Some weeks later, when you experienced a string of suspicious phone calls at your home.
Because the rapist was still free, yes.
Did you forget that their response time was 8 minutes? Did you forget that you thanked them for their tireless efforts on your behalf? Did you forget all this?
I also expressed my frustration and my fear.
And yet here they are, accused of negligence and sexual discrimination.
The law said I had to state names. I never wanted that. I am not attacking them personally.
Your resume prior to your rape reflects, would you agree, a history of varied and seemingly directionless employment?
No. I was a contract worker. I do many things very well. I never wanted to do one thing my entire life.
According to your numerous anonymous media interviews, you consider yourself a social activist.
Yes.
Isn't it true that you already disliked and distrusted the police prior to your rape? Isn't it true that you regarded the police as a mostly male extension of the establishment which you had so frequently been active against all your life?
No. Prior to my rape, I respected the police. I'll admit my opinion of them has been downgraded somewhat lately based on my personal experience with them.
We seem to disagree on whether a specific warning was warranted in the balcony rapist case.
We do.
You consider yourself a well-informed adult. You read the papers daily?
I do.
Exhibit 384.
Jane Doe's lawyers watch intently from their table.
Would you read these aloud for us, please?
Jane puts on her reading glasses, opens a folder, and glances at her legal team. As she reads, her lawyers make notes, then confer.
April 12th, 1986. The Toronto police are investigating a violent sexual assault.
He's doing a 180 warning.
I think you'd ask for a recess. She knows it's coming and she hates surprises.
July 30th, 1986.
Ask for a recess. Let her get her bearings.
She doesn't want a break. She wants an injection. She can get away.
The victim told police officers the assailant threatened her life.
Take your time, please. Relax. Take it easy.
The police say the offender entered through the victim's balcony, raped at knife point.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, please? The police say...
Police say the offender entered through the victim's balcony. She was raped and brutalized at knife point. The police have no suspects as of yet. I'm sorry. You said to stop you if I found it upsetting, and I find this I find it upsetting.
You find these upsetting? I am not surprised. Because it indicates there was ample indication for an informed, urban adult like yourself to consider yourself warned. Rapes occurred in 1986.
Jane's eyes blink rapidly.
No, because I was raped. And you are having me review the gory details of other women's rapes ad nauseum, I think, to upset me.
Oh, I'm so sorry you feel that way. Let's stop there, then. Let's stop there. Over 40 news items, advising it would seem that there was some trouble in the downtown area that summer. Did you see any of these items in 1986? Did you see any of them?
It was 11 years ago, I may have.
Can you honestly say you were unaware of women at risk of rape and sexual assault in the downtown area at that time?
Sadly, I was and am well aware that women are always at risk.
So as a matter of course, a woman should expect to have to protect herself.
I did protect myself. My doors were locked. Had I known the specific danger I was in, as the police did, I would have taken extraordinary precautions, had a friend stayed elsewhere.
Had you known the specific danger? Over 40 news items were not enough to warrant that. I wonder what would be. Cops at every door, bars on all the windows. Women deported to outlying areas.
I understand.
I wonder what would be.
Perhaps the police could have believed and pursued justice for any of the other four women raped by Paul Callow before me.
Were you cut by Callow's knife?
No.
Visibly bruised, scratched, disfigured?
Visibly? No.
Battered or choked by Callow?
No.
You survived?
Yes, as best I could.
Counselor Sharp slaps a document down. Jane picks it up.
So, according to the FBI profile the police used to classify Callow's M.O., yours was a non-violent rape.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please.
I don't understand. Are you saying that it could have been worse?
Does it or does it not qualify as non-violent according to those guidelines?
Jane glances at Sean.
Please, please do not exercise your alleged need for control and attention on the court's valuable time. We're waiting.
Jane glares at Sharp.
We are waiting. Does it or does it not qualify as non-violence?
Peering at the document, Jane wets her lips.
According to these guidelines, mine was a non-violent rape.
Well, thank you. You have accepted paid speaking engagements about your rape, true?
Well, I've had to. I haven't been able to work much. This case has made keeping a full-time job
difficult. Your lawyers are working for free, and you are attempting to win. How much?
Well, I couldn't afford it otherwise.
How much?
$1.2 million.
I beg your pardon. How much?
$1.2 million, but they are working for free because I couldn't afford it otherwise.
$1.2 million, and you enjoy significant local celebrity in spite or because of your anonymity.
But, you know, I have not been afraid to present myself as an alternative to most people's erroneous perceptions of what a raped woman must be like. My efforts to educate the public are part of my recovery process. This has become my life's work.
The benefits of which have resulted in lucrative movie offers. Speculation about running for city council. Yes? Answer yes or no.
I did not
answer
choose.
Answer yes or no. Answer yes or no.
I have done
Your
the
Honor,
best
I'm directing
I can.
The plaintiff to answer yes or no.
Answer the question, please.
Yes.
Well, it would appear that while the taxpayers are paying plenty to listen to this presentation of the image of this poor, shattered wreck of a woman, the reality appears to be we have a very astute businesswoman before us.
I'm
finished here, Your Honor.
I will not agree that it was a good thing
no
I was raped, if that is
Honor.
What you are after.
Later with Cherie.
Oh, and I will never agree that it was a good thing I was raped. I've waited years to tell everything that judge should hear. And I come out sounding like amateur night at the limelight.
Now in Jane's kitchen, July 3rd, 1998. Jane doubles over and hurries from the room. Now in her lawyer's office, Jane sits in a chair, her head propped on one hand. On the couch, Sean and Eric lean forward, their feet tapping nervously. Cynthia twirls a strand of hair. A messenger delivers a brown envelope. Eric grabs it and pulls out a document. Sean and Cynthia read over Eric's shoulder as Jane Doe watches from her chair.
The defendants do not suggest, even in argument, why their conduct in the circumstances of this case be justifiable. I suggest the answer is a simple one.
Because they cannot negligent not to warn.
Lack of warning stemmed from systemic discrimination against women in general.
Jane Doe in particular. And the $20,000 in general and special damages, an additional $8,000 for future medical costs, $2,000 a year for the next 15 years.
Okay. What about change?
She orders a public declaration by the police that their actions violated your charter rights.
Well, no, the public admission, they're going to be politically accountable. They're going to have to change.
They all break into grins and hug each other. Jane Doe throws her arms around Sean, then rocks Eric into a hug. She squeezes Cynthia tight.
I don't believe it! All right!
Yes!
Now, in Jane Doe's living room, she drops the document onto a coffee table, then strolls to the balcony door and gazes out through its glass window. Her lips tighten. Slowly, she turns a key in a deadbolt, unfastens a chain, and unbolts another lock. She opens the inner door, then pushes open the storm door. She steps outside onto her balcony. The door swings shut behind her. She takes slow steps over to the waist-high railing and leans on it. A stiff breeze ruffles her shoulder-length hair. A sob shakes her body. She takes a deep breath. Fade to black. Now, words appear. The City of Toronto refused to permit a police appeal of the Jane Doe verdict, procedures relating to rape and sexual assault. As of 2002, Jane Doe contends the majority of those recommendations have not been implemented by the force.